Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. It is Saturday morning, so we are talking about topics that don't fall into our regular categories, and answering some questions and addressing some feedback. And this recently, we've been going through a series on tithing, giving, and the scriptures, and see if we can get somewhere today. We're going to go ahead and jump right into that. So last week, we were talking about the tithe that went to the priesthood. We're going to start this week with Deuteronomy 14, 22 through 29. And this tithe went to the priesthood and the poor. And again, just for context, what we're talking about is how the scriptures identify tithing. And where the scriptures don't, where they do, and when they mention, when they talk about tithing, how specific it is and how clear it is. So in Deuteronomy 14 through 22 through 29, I'm going to go ahead and read it, and then we'll discuss it a little bit. And again, this is the next in line. And here we are in Deuteronomy, the fourth of the five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the fifth. So we're finally at the end of the Torah, the fifth book, where the law is being repeated. That's what Deuteronomy means, is repetition, a repeat, or a second time. And what refers to. What we want to, again, be taking away is when the scriptures refer to tithing, it's very specific and very clear. And it's very clear as to who tithes, what they tithe, when they tithe, and to whom they tithe, and what is supposed to be done with the tithe. And again, the distinction between tithing, as in a tenth, which is a noun, it's an adjective, it describes the noun, like a tenth of a 100 apples is 10 apples. So it's not a action. But then there is the action of to tithe, verbing. It is a verb, to do something. And this is to fulfill the law. You hand over 10% in various ways. And sometimes it's more or less, and we'll get into some of the additional descriptions of it's not always a tenth. And we'll get into that when we summarize what's really going on. What's really interesting is that it's clear. And for so long, and this is obviously not true for everyone, plenty of people have sought this out for themselves, but that's caused a lot of problems. Because when you really look at it and you really find out what the scriptures say, that's not what's being taught. And that's the bottom line, is if you're going to be taught by the scriptures, you want to do the searching out for yourselves and not be relying on somebody else to tell you this, what the scriptures say. I'm looking at the Blog Talk Radio screen right now, and there's an advertising for someone, another person's ministry, talking about God's tithing law. And, of course, it's part one, and there's an advertisement for it. And it's you know, it's a way to get people to give money. It's coercion. So what we want to not only say that, we want to be able to say, and this is why. So the tithe for the priesthood and the poor, Deuteronomy 14, 22 through 29. Oh, and there, what we're following along is all written down in a free PDF. Just download it. You don't have to register or anything. It's available for your use. You can share it with others. You just can't sell it. And you can't take my name off of it. And you can't edit it. So as is, you can share it and print it out as much as you'd like. And it's on the profile page at Blog Talk Radio as a PDF. And it's also on our blog wecanprepare.org. So here we go. Deuteronomy 14. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil. Okay, that's new. Of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too long for you, so that you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. Now, just stop for a second. One of the reasons that that's probably in there is so that you don't have to drive your herd or try to ship your crops long distance, because it could be ruined by the travel. And again, this is later, so I suspect that they were trying to do some of this and they kept on running into problems. And so they would add. And in the adding, they would address problems that came up. One of the problems being that when they tried to take, a tenth of their newborn animals, or their tenth of their herd, or their tenth of their harvest, it would spoil or die on the way to the places where the tabernacle was. So there's a substitution going on. It's a practical substitution. So that you exchange it for money. You convert it to its value. And you take that value to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for the sacrifice, that is, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. You shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. Then at the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. Now, it's really interesting how specific and yet practical, and over time, within the Jewish tradition and history, every time they tried to clarify the law, not just tithing, but any of the law, it often just made it more confusing. And so more instruction, more clarification had to be added. And we'll see that as we go. So here, additional circumstances regarding the tithing are clarified. For those who lived a long distance from the center of the nation, so that the animals would not be up to traveling the distance or the grain spoil on the way, the Israelites could convert their tithe, their grain and their animals, to their value in currency, gold and silver, and then take the money to the place where the Lord chooses and purchase there whatever is necessary to celebrate the feast. Admonishment to include the Levites is repeated. Now, this isn't given to the Levites. It's shared with the Levites. A third tithe is specified every 3 years. The tithe of the year's produce, not animals, just the fruit of the land, was to be put into a community storehouse. This was to be a resource for the local Levites and those who were in need, the stranger, the orphaned, and the widowed. So, again, every third year, you would put a third of your produce into a storehouse for others to meet the needs of the priests, the Levites, and the community. So here we are back to the community's responsibility, the community's involvement. This was not just the people deciding this. This was a structure and a function of a new kind of form of government for a people that did not have a government before. There were traditions and laws, but these laws that we're talking about, where the least able to help themselves were taken care of, this is one of the strengths of what we often refer to as the Judeo-Christian philosophy or tradition. This was the way that those that were in need were automatically taken care of, where it wasn't left up to the goodwill of the people. Now, one of the problems with that is it did remove, even though it talks about it in other places, the absolute responsibility of family to take care of family. They could leave it up to strangers to take care of their widowed relative, their orphaned relative. And this is where you see the character in some, for instance, the Book of Ruth is all about where the heritage, the family ties were honored without, according to tradition, without being mandated by law. And so you see through the law so much, instead of that, the character, the moral law, being instilled and reinforced in individuals, instead it is put into legal relationships. And unfortunately, through that, those personal responsibilities are removed. And we can see in our own situation today, in Christian, Judeo-Christian tradition, where that's come to be full-blown, where very often someone in need does not turn to their family first. They turn to the government. And this is where that started. In an attempt, for the writers who wrote these books, in order to instill a cultural identity to a people, they also removed from them their absolute personal responsibility, their family responsibility, their community responsibility. Someone previously to this law, for instance, being written down, may have been sharing half of everything they had with their community because they had more. Maybe they had the most fertile land for whatever reason. And so they were being generous with everyone in their community and helping those who needed it. They were all related, so they were helping their family. Well, now, all they have to do, they don't have to give anything to their family. All they have to do is give or put in 10%, and they can cross that duty off their list and not even think about the needs of their community, the needs of their family. So, and it also allowed those who were in need to be helped anonymously. And one of the reasons that's a problem is because there's something in us, in all of us, that we have a hard time accepting charity. Accepting something we didn't deserve or we didn't earn. And that's a good thing because it is also necessary for us all to be a partaker, involved in our own future. That for each one of us, our personal responsibility needs to be maintained for us to function here on this earth the way God intended. Again, we're overcomers. We're learning to rule and reign. And if we don't see our personal involvement in that process, then we leave it all to God. We leave it all to those who are teaching us. We leave it all to our leaders. And we have abdicated our very identity. And we're not behaving according to who we truly are. God's going to deal with that on an individual basis. But this is where this all started as far as social and cultural constructs. These writings influenced, of course, not just, you know, the Christian tradition, but other traditions as well. When you start almost, you know, neutrally, anonymously saying, subjectively saying, this is, if you do this, you're a good person, you've taken away the responsibility of the individual to develop their own moral compass. When you say which we do here, for instance, you are now a giving person. It is your responsibility to find out from God what that means for you at any given time. When that's taken away by saying, you're now a giving person, to prove that, you have to give 10% to your church. You've now altered your relationship with God, your dependent relationship with God. You have an outside standard that you're trying to meet rather than a relationship reinforced moment by moment in regards to giving. So you can see how culturally this, the whole concept had a tremendous impact. And as we go through, you'll see how so much of the problems and the emphasis, how much time within organized religion is taken up with dealing with finances, with money. It's because we're, the individual is not said, you are responsible to find out from God what you should be doing with it. We're going to give you some guidelines, but it's your responsibility. Instead, people are told, here, this is what you do with your money. And because God's sovereignty in our lives is being usurped in that area, it's important to Him. That's an area in our lives, if we are not relying on Him, where we have let someone else kick God off the thrones in our lives. And He's not going to let that stand. Which is great. Now, freedom is hard. Freedom and responsibility take time, they take effort, they take energy. But it's worth it. Freedom is satisfying. And dependence on God is based on our freedom. You are free to be dependent on God. So, a third of the tithe, then, every 3 years, was brought into the community storehouse, a food bank, if you will. Those that were in need and the Levites that lived in that area, that was for their benefit. It was there for them. It was their storehouse. And it's interesting how we do similar types of things and we feel good about donating to the local food bank. We never have to know if one of the people who needs that food is our neighbor. And our neighbor can be poor anonymously. Now, it's one thing to be in need and unable to take care of your own needs. But when it's easy for us, we've made it a lifestyle. When we're coming to rely on an anonymous system to meet our needs rather than being called on it and asked, okay, but how are you going to do this next time? Have you gotten a job? Have you talked to your family? Can you move in with your son-in-law? And when we first say, well, you've paid into the system, so you should be supported by the system, the system has effectively usurped the family. So we want to be aware of that. And again, this is where it started. So it's not like it's anything new. But it's also, just because it's, again, in the scriptures, doesn't mean it's the best for us. Now, this was written before salvation was available. This was written before they could become a Christian. Before they could have that dependent relationship on God. So, which just again reinforces, why are we following it now? This was for non-Christians. So the next addition to the tithe, or the next explanation, again, we consider this the original foundational scriptural descriptions of the tithe, still in Deuteronomy chapter 26, 12 through 15. The triannual tithe and the declaration of fulfillment of the law. In other words, okay, this is the last, what's going to be added to the law. If you do all this, you can check that box next to making God happy and deserving his blessings. When you have finished laying aside all the tithe of your increase in the third year, the year of tithing, and have given it to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat within your gates and be filled, then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the holy tithe from my house, and also have given to them, the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all your commandments, which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. I have not eaten any of it when in mourning, nor have I removed any of it for an unclean use, nor given any of it for the dead. I have obeyed the voice of the Lord my God, and have done according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation, from heaven, and bless your people Israel, and the land which you have given us, just as you swore to our fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now, unfortunately, so many of these descriptions of tithing and of relationship are put forth as a good thing. But look at this right here. What has happened is, instead of having that emphasis on knowing God, on having a heart for him, the emphasis is now, have you fulfilled the commandment? Have you done what you were commanded to do? Not, have you shown love? Have you known God? It's no longer about character. It's no longer about value, the value of giving. You can hate your neighbor and give the tithe to the storehouse, fulfill the commandments, and be deserving of blessing. And we'll get into some of that. This is exactly what Jesus points out later. But you can already see this is where this all started. So every third year was instituted as the year of tithing, after they have fulfilled their responsibilities toward the Levites and the needy. The Israelites are also instructed to pledge before the Lord that they have fulfilled the requirements of his commandments, followed by their petition for blessing and the fulfillment of his promise. We clearly see the Lord's emphasis on both hospitality and charity. But again, it's not about the heart. Notice also that in both this case and the previous, the needy were to eat within your gates and be filled. This was not meant to be a petty portion, but to fully satisfy those that came for help. So next Saturday we'll pick up at the summary of the tithe as legislated in the law of Moses. And we'll go from there. And then we're going to start going into the additions, that just what was written down in the law of Moses wasn't enough. There needed to be further clarification. And we find that it just goes on and on and on, even today. I mean, look, we're talking about it. It can't be that clear. But we'll start next Saturday, 9 o'clock, on the summary of the tithe as legislated in the law of Moses. Until then, have a great weekend. We'll be getting back together again Monday at 7:30. This has been Diane Thomas of Prepare Radio. Thanks for tuning in.